Hi, this is David Anderson of Lean Kanban. You're listening to the Agile Uprising podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm Colleen Johnson, and my co-host today is Paul Elia.
Hello.
Hello, Paul. We're joined today by guests David Anderson.
Hi.
And Teodora Bozeva.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you guys for joining us today.
Thanks for having us, Colleen.
Wonderful. So we are going to be talking about the Kanban maturity model with David and Teodora today. But before we dig into the meat of what the Kanban maturity model is and where it originated, we'd love to have you both tell our guests a little bit about yourselves. Teodora, would you mind going first?
No. Well, I'm a Kanban coach and accredited Kanban trainer. I'm based in Spain, and I'm using Kanban for helping companies to improve their agility since 2012, when I took David's Kanban coaching class. And I have seen very different situations in different organizations, small, mediums, recently a very large organization, a bank, and I have used it in technology companies, in the industry companies, in financial areas. So I'm really very happy with the results I see after some time working with it in the companies. Well, I'm happy because they are happy. Mm-hmm. And that's how this is what I'm doing. And since last year, March, since 2017 in March, I've been working with David on the Kanban maturity model, and I'm really happy with the results we have obtained until now.
Wonderful.
But we still have lots of work ahead, so.
Great. We're excited to hear more about that today. And David, can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself as well?
Hi, I'm David Anderson. I'm the chairman of Lean Kanban Incorporated. We're based in Seattle. I'm also the author of Kanban Successful Evolutionary Change for Your Technology Business, a book that we published in 2010. And I was really responsible for starting this whole Kanban thing in knowledge worker industries, professional services, when I coached a department at Microsoft as early as 2004. And then I took our learnings from that and repeated it and expanded on it at a private company Bill Gates owned in Seattle called Corbis. I started the business in 2008, and we've been growing that global network of Kanban training, consulting, publishing, and conferences and events over the last 10 years. It's kind of amazing to think that it's more than 10 years already.
Wonderful. Well, we're very happy to have you both with us today and to talk through your new book and the new material surrounding the Kanban maturity model. Let's start off very simply with what is the Kanban maturity model and how does it differ from the Kanban method?
Shall I answer this question?
Sure.
The Kanban maturity model is a model in the first place. It's not the Kanban method. And it's a model of organizational maturity. So it defines, in particular, 7 profiles of organizational maturity. And along these profiles, which we call maturity levels, they are organizational maturity levels, not Kanban maturity levels, we see how organizations evolve by means of the practices we suggest. The Kanban maturity model is a model for another reason too, because it's a collection of practices that come from 10 years of experience with Kanban, with many, many companies all over the world. And David and I, we have codified these practices and we have mapped them to these different organizational profiles or maturity levels. And in this way, organizations are able to select, to identify and select which are the appropriate practices for them, depending on their current context and depending on the purpose, the business purpose that they have. So the Kanban maturity model is focused on improving business outcomes for the organization, for the organizations. It also provides a number of mappings. It provides a mapping to cultural values, a mapping to Lean and Toyota production systems, a mapping to CMMI, to real world risk model. And all these mappings, in our opinion, facilitate the usage of the model, of the Kanban maturity model, in organizations who already use these other models or methods and can see how they fit with the Kanban maturity model.
Yeah, well, the Kanban method, which essentially was defined in the 2010 book, Kanban, Successful Evolutionary Change for Your Technology Business, captured what we'd been doing at Corbis and generalized it in a way that, that people might be able to apply it in their own organization. So it came with six general practices: visualize, limit your work in progress, manage the flow of work, make policies explicit, implement feedback loops, and continuously improve and evolve your processes. And it had some principles behind it, and those principles broke out into a set that were focused on service delivery. So if a customer asks for something, how good are you at actually getting it to them, delivering what they asked for, and in a manner that, that they find acceptable in a timely manner, for example. And then there was a set of change management principles that essentially said that we prefer to start with what you do now and evolve your processes. And in the early days, we would talk about the idea of continuous improvement. But over the years, we refined that, particularly for a Western management audience, a European and North American management audience, where they seem to prefer the idea that you evolve and improve until you're fit for purpose. You don't simply continuously improve forever and ever for the sake of it. So the Kanban method defines essentially a set of abstract practices which, if implemented, will give you a service orientation, a focus on improvement, the capability to improve, and a capability to understand whether you're now good enough, whether you're fit for purpose, and you can take the heat off improving in one area and then go focus on another area. So that was all very well, and the book was based on real experience. But with a set of abstract practices, of course, people implemented them in many different ways. And it was that diversity of implementation that enabled us later to recognize different styles of implementation, different practices, different patterns of implementation. And we've mapped those patterns to the organizational maturity model in the new book, the Kanban Maturity Model.
I'd like to give our listeners kind of an anatomy of the book. So the first section of the book describes the organization maturity levels 0 through 6, and it gives some mappings to other models. And there's this second section, if you will, it's, to me, it's like a field guide. It's full of patterns and anti-patterns, both where organizations might be either under-applying or over-applying Kanban. I'd like to take our listeners through these levels so they can get a sense for what they are. I want to start with why there was a need for maturity level 0, which the word for it is oblivious in the model.
So the model is, it's a hybrid or a synthesis of of some other ideas, some other maturity models that have been around for a while. It most closely maps to the existing capability maturity model integration. And the CMMI very recently became version 2.0. And I think Teodora might want to talk about that. But the earlier version 1.3 or the 1.x variants of that model, there was no level zero. And level one, they didn't define what was in level one. The level zero we have in the name Oblivious actually comes from Jerry Weinberg's maturity model, which he published in his Quality Software Management Volume 1 back in 1997. And the need for it is actually that we recognize it in our case study literature, that we have examples of companies where their starting point was, we don't need no stinking process, we don't need any management, we don't need any policies. It was essentially some sort of free-for-all sort of anarchy ethic in the workplace. Yes. And in several examples, they were quite small companies, startup companies, and their capital was running out and they had a need to get products in the market or deliver customer orders. And they recognized that the anarchy approach wasn't getting them there. And they, of course, if there are case studies, there are companies where they've adopted Kanban and it helped take them above that level. So level zero is in the model, not just as some sort of thought experiment. It's actually observed case study literature.
So Teodora, David alluded to, you might want to say more about CMMI 2.0.
And particularly that they've now included a level zero and level one in version two.
The interesting thing is that CMMI version 2.0 appeared the same month we launched the Kanban maturity model in March this year. We were working on the Kanban maturity model, we were using the previous version, version 1.3 of CMMI, but once version 2.0 was launched, we revised our work and we checked how we map to the current version of the model. The good point is that we continue mapping very well. The Kanban maturity model fits very well in CMMI organizations, even with CMMI 2.0. So it will be very helpful for these organizations for increasing their agility. We saw that CMMI 2.0 includes already maturity level one, and before the previous version did not include it. The level was not defined. There were no practices defined for maturity level one. So this fits to the Kanban maturity model, and we still have practices defined for maturity level zero. CMMI maturity, the new version of CMMI does not include maturity level six, which we still include, still have in the Kanban maturity model. And from the point of using together both CMMI and the Kanban maturity model, the mapping or the joint usage is mainly related to the capability areas related to planning and managing the work, delivering and managing services, managing the workforce, improving performance, because the Kanban maturity model is mostly focused on improving business outcomes. We have identified in more details which are the practice areas from the capability maturity model that map directly to the content of KMM. And I think that both models can be used very well together.
Okay. Well, let's give our listeners some sense of what these levels are. I thought it was interesting that maturity level zero, again, oblivious, includes personal Kanban. And I think you alluded to it at the beginning that the maturity model is about organizations, not about individuals.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's the simple explanation. If we had been creating a personal maturity model, then we probably have four different recognized personal Kanban implementation patterns that would map against, for want of a better term, personal maturity. You could imagine that, say, someone who's a professional athlete, and they take their life really quite seriously. They measure everything. They gather data on everything they do, their diet, their exercise program, and so on. It's very quantitatively analyzed. And they're like a maturity level 5, you know, individual. But because our model is an organizational maturity model, we bundled all of the personal Kanban into level 0. Because if you're just an individual with a Kanban board in a corner of your cubicle and no one else in the office is doing it or paying attention to you, then the organizational maturity isn't improving.
Right. Oh, that's good. So ML1 is emerging. And one of the things I really like in the book that makes the first few levels, levels 1 through 4, very approachable, is there's always a paragraph about pizza delivery business. So I wanted to read the MLs 1 through 4. Let's start with level 1. So if we were in the pizza delivery business at level 1, we'd observe that the method of preparing, baking, and delivering pizza was inconsistent and that defined procedures were not followed consistently. We would also observe that often the pizza delivered was of the wrong type, missing ingredients, or a poor quality upon delivery, or that the delivery time varied dramatically. The customer experience here would be to conclude that the vendor is extremely unreliable. So that's emerging. What can you say more about emerging? Theodora, I'll go to you first.
At this level, what we see emerging is the understanding that some management practices are helpful for delivering the work as a team. We also see emerging the need and the understanding that if people start working together, if they collaborate, they deliver a better job. And they also the understanding that transparency is helpful for this situation. So these are the main aspects that emerge at this maturity level. The understanding of the need of the process, collaboration, transparency. And we see all these aspects in the patterns of the Kanban boards and also in the values and in the practices themselves.
I think there's a feeling of individual overburdening or a desire to be relieved of overburdening. And in the very first instance, just visualizing things, introducing a very simple Kanban board, starts to shed light on just how overburdened people are. And there might be some focus on introducing personal WIP limits to relieve individuals of overburdening. Meanwhile, there may be very little concept of service delivery, that a small team may not be particularly aware of who the end customer is or why the end customer asked for a particular item. There's very little concept of what would represent good service delivery, or perhaps even what represents adequate quality. So there is a focus more on the individual and just relieve me of this stressful situation so that I can do a better quality job. There tends not to be defined processes. And in our case study literature, we see it with startup companies and also with departments or services within companies which are in emergent or nascent markets, where they're still discovering what it is they do, how they do it, how they serve their customers. So we see these very simple sort of to do, doing and done type of Kanban boards, because the doing part of it isn't strongly defined. It's still emergent, hence the name of the level.
No, that's good. So there's a board, there's probably a generic set of states that cards move through, and there's probably some kind of personal attachment, like it's either a swim lane for a person or you're using a person's icon on the board. So it's a collection of personal Kanban.
The one of the patterns, we actually call it aggregated personal Kanban.
Okay. Yep. So Colleen, do you have your purple book with you? I don't want to hog the pizza episodes if you want to read along as well. And then I was going to toss this back over to you for the discussion at the higher level, since you're a trained coach and I'm a super fan.
I don't have my copy in front of me. So if you want to continue,
okay,
it'd be great. And then I'll bounce in some questions after the pizza section.
Okay. So pizza number two is maturity level two, and this is defined. So again, that the analogy with the pizza delivery business is we'd observed that the method of preparing, baking, and delivering pizza was consistent, and that the defined procedures, key I think there is defined procedures we have now, they're followed consistently. And however, we'd still observe that the pizza was occasionally delivered with the wrong type or missing ingredients or poor quality on delivery. So we'd also see that the delivery time differed dramatically from expectations. So our customer still sees this team at ML2 as unreliable. Let's say more about maturity level two. David, you want to start?
I think perhaps Teodora has a good example from even a pizza business in the neighborhood where she lives.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yes. Since we were working on the Kanban maturity model, I was observing the pizza shop, which I have just beside my house. And once I went to get my pizzas, which I ordered some time ago, and the lady told me that, you know, your pizza will take some more time. And I asked her why should it take more time? Do you have lots of orders today? And she told me, no, it's simply because when the guys in the kitchen start seeing that more and more orders are entering, they open the oven more often in order to try to put more pizzas inside to bake them faster. But instead of baking the pizzas faster, the baking process gets slower because the oven gets cooler. Right. So this is exactly the example of having a consistent process. Theoretically, they know that how many pizzas fit into the oven and how much time they have to bake the pizzas. However, under stress, they might take some actions like opening the oven and trying to put another pizza. And this, instead of improving the delivery time, worsens it.
Hmm.
That's a great example.
Yeah. What happens in organizations at maturity level two is that maybe they really have some defined processes, and they know how to implement, how to perform these processes at each one of the steps or each one of the services, if we see the entire workflow as a collection of services. However, sometimes between these different steps or these different services, there are either larger queues that are formed, or sometimes maybe some services struggling without work. So this leads to loss of to lead time, which is not predictable.
Yeah, so Paul hasn't mentioned it yet, but one of the aspects of the model is we recognize that below level three, or indeed sort of level three is the the threshold for this. So at level three and below, when you stress the organization, things tend to get worse. And there tends to be a loss of discipline. There is a tendency to forget about following process and procedures, and the consequence is usually that the customer experience degrades under stress. And I think this pizza restaurant adjacent to Teodoro's house in Bilbao is a great example of one that when they get stressed, the customer service deteriorates.
Right. So ML3 managed sounds like it's a good thing, but I'm going to ask you both to elaborate on it. So I, using the pizza delivery business again for managed, we'd observed that the method of preparing, baking, and delivering pizza was consistent. Fine procedures are followed consistently, and the pizza is also delivered consistently, correct, with respect to high quality, and it's within service delivery expectations. So now the customer perception is the vendor's very reliable. Have we reached stability yet? Or do we still buckle under stress conditions?
So I think it's a really good question, Paul. And at the time when we finished the book very early this year, we might have tended to answer and say, well, a level three organization will still buckle under stress. And we probably have case study examples that we could point to. But the customer experience is usually one of good service. Expectations are met, happy customers, except under very exceptional, stressful circumstances where that might break down. But during this year, while we've been developing an extension for the model, which will be described in the second edition of the book next year in 2019, and launched as a sort of plug-in extension called the Leadership Practices Extension. We've been exploring organizational behavior and leadership behavior a lot more. And we've come to recognize that level three, ML3, is an inherently unstable condition, that an organization can be at level three, they can have happy customers, they can be meeting customer expectation all the time, but they might be doing it in a way that could be described as martyrdom, that they are sacrificing their staff or their capital, their profitability, in order to keep doing it, that there's a certain amount of, we kept our standards up, but it required a heroic effort or an unsustainable effort. And one of the businesses we've been using as an example of that would be Uber during the Travis Kalanick period as the chief executive, where they were achieving their SLAs on very good customer service, you know, show up to pick someone up, the journey would be accurate, the billing would be accurate, and so on. But they were doing it at the expense of the drivers. Drivers were sleeping in their cars. Some of them were working very long days. Uber was offering very cheap prices. And drivers were reporting to me that the money they were making wasn't sustainable. They couldn't afford to service their vehicles or replace the vehicle when it developed a high mileage and it was due for replacement. So Uber was achieving good customer service, but at the expense of the infrastructure required to make it happen, the vehicles and the drivers and so on. So ultimately, it wasn't sustainable. And had they not replaced the chief executive and with the new one there, Dara Khosrowshahi, he is really trying to take Uber to level four, that the good customer service isn't at the expense of the other aspects of the business, the aspects of replacing the vehicles, creating a sustainable pace for the drivers, and also meeting regulatory requirements in different countries. It does appear that a change of leadership is focusing on taking them to the next level, where had that not happened, I think there was a strong possibility that they would have regressed back to level two, because the good quality customer service wouldn't have been sustainable as drivers burned out, as vehicles got old and became unreliable.
Well, and they could have sacrificed money to the drivers, but that still would have been a different form of unsustainable, right?
Well, that's right. You know, and you can make the argument that Uber loses very large sums of money. I haven't followed the details recently, but the numbers are in the billions per year, and in fact, perhaps more than a billion per quarter. So they are sacrificing their investors' capital in order to achieve the service levels. And ultimately, that is not sustainable forever.
Hmm.
So level three defines this sort of interim condition where the customer is now happy. And what needs to be put in place behind the scenes is the stability, the reliable infrastructure, the sustainable pace for the workforce, and ultimately profitability.
Right. The shareholders and the employees. So I'm going to roll right into that's perfect for maturity level four, quantitatively managed versus managed in level three. Now we start to talk about running an economically successful pizza delivery business, offering maybe a different number of classes of service, such as an express delivery menu. And we cope with the ebb and flow in demand. So we don't have this oven problem that Theodora mentioned. We figured that out, right? And you understand the cyclical nature of our business. So we're optimally staffed most of the time, and our costs are tightly controlled without affecting our delivery capability or impacting customer satisfaction. And under stress, the organization goes to an emergency or an exception procedure and takes mitigation and remedial action to reduce the likelihood or impact of the occurrence or completely prevent recurrence. So this is great. ML4 sounds like a good place to want to be, but we still have two more levels to go. Tell us more about ML4.
Level four is also about managing risks and about understanding quantitatively the different pieces of the entire sub-process of the entire workflow. And in fact, this understanding allows organizations to start using statistical predictive models, and this allows them to improve the predictability of their services. And improving the risk management makes them better prepared for unexpected events in their business environment. So this is the big improvement that they achieve at maturity level four.
Yeah, so really with level four, we're saying we have a robust, resilient, sustainable, fit-for-purpose business with satisfied customers. And as you said, Paul, that's a great place to be. And we think that for many of our clients out there, for many people in the population, the workforce, where they're looking at adopting methods like Kanban, the aspirational level for their business should reasonably be level four. That where most of the market we see is at level one or two, we think many of those companies, and particularly the leadership, the executive management, when they hear the description of level four, they think, yes, that's where we need to get to. And then that leads to the next question, which is how do we get started? And when then there's a need for some coaching. That's where maybe a Kanban coach can step in and say, well, you know, hold on, you know, really you're only at level one right now. Let's walk before we run. If we can get from level one to level two, that's a huge step forward, and we'll aspire to level four.
Oh yeah, I'd be really happy with level four in a number of things, including the Agile Uprising podcast. Colleen, I'm gonna pass it back over to you if you wanna take us through five and six and beyond.
Yeah, definitely. If David, maybe you can start by just giving us a high-level overview of what's different from maturity level 5 and 6. And then, I think the question for a lot of our listeners is, you mentioned, for a lot of organizations, 4, maturity level 4 is going to be a great place to be. Is maturity level 6 truly achievable for most organizations, or is the intent that getting that high is unreachable?
I'll come back to that. I'll elaborate on that a little bit later, but no, certainly we don't believe it's unreachable. It's not nirvana. Maybe okay. There's a level 7 we should have in future. Level 5 is about optimizing on that level 4, that robust, resilient, stable, fit for purpose organization. And it's easier to understand perhaps more in a sporting context, that imagine you're running a Formula One open wheel racing car team. Well, a level 4 team would be able to continue racing in the Formula, to hold one of the franchises and show up at all the races and come back year after year. But they would be they would be driving around in sort of between 10th and 24th place in the race and finishing well down the championship table. But if you aspire to be the world champions, then you need to be able to be that little bit better than everyone else. The term that's used in Formula One and also bicycle racing and some other forms of sport is marginal gains. And a level 5 organization is capable of finding those marginal gains, of squeezing the last bit of extra performance. So they're capable of producing perhaps differentiating performance in their products, or a differentiating level of quality, or that slightly bit better service that makes them the best. Level 4 is about being good enough and very sustainable, where level 5 is about aspiring to be the best. And level 5 is therefore appropriate in highly competitive environments. So while Formula 1 might be an obviously highly competitive environment, we come across others. We occasionally bump into, for example, government organizations whose job it is to monitor cyber terrorism. And that's a highly competitive environment because there's a bunch of bad guys out there hacking and trying to create exploits across the internet. And meanwhile, the government organization would be racing to try and stay ahead of that. So there are situations in commerce where there is a highly competitive situation, or it might just be that there's a leader of a company where they openly aspire to be the best. Their identity is to be the best. And therefore, they need to aspire to be level 5, not just level 4. With level 6 is about the capability to recognize that your entire environment is changing. The ability to question how we do things, what we do, why we exist, and even potentially who we are as a business. And from time to time, to be capable of reinventing the business in order that it would survive. So if I was to use the history of IBM as an example, there have been periods in IBM's history where being level 4 or 5 just simply wasn't good enough for the business to survive and thrive into the future. Originally, IBM was called CTR, the Computing, Tabulating and Recording Company. And their main products were things like time card recording machines, punch card machines for hourly paid workers to record when they entered and left a factory. And the business had was created by the merger of four companies by Thomas Watson Sr. And then some years later, about 35 years later, his son, Thomas Watson Jr., reinvented the company as a mainframe manufacturer, as a technology, as a high-tech computer manufacturing company. And then again, about 30 years after that, Lou Gerstner reinvented them as a professional services company. And then very recently, IBM announced they were exiting the mainframe business after more than 50 years in that line of technology. So IBM continues, but the who they are has changed. They were this physical tabulating and counting machine company originally, then they were a mainframe company, then a professional services company. And there's an argument that right now they're going through a transition to become the artificial intelligence company with their Watson platform. And interestingly, of course, it's called Watson, named after the founders of IBM some 100 years or so ago now. So level six is something that companies don't need to be all of the time, but there will be times in their history where if they are to survive because of changes in technology, disruption, changes in market conditions or political conditions and so on, they require to have level six capability. They require to be able to sense what's happening in the market and to drive changes and to be able to question not just how you do things or what you do, but why you exist and even who you are. That's a very significant challenge for companies. It's a significant challenge for leaders and for the individuals working in a company. It can be very disruptive, and for many of them, it may mean that they have to leave the business and find a job elsewhere.
We've spent a fair amount of time talking about the benefits that this model can bring to the organization and understanding where they are and where they want to be and the context around those goals, whether it's long-term or short-term, like you're describing for level six. Let's switch gears a little and talk about what this model provides for coaches. Can one of you talk a little bit more about that lead appraiser role?
Maybe I can answer this question. For coaches, the model, even before talking about the lead appraiser role, the model is very useful for coaches because they can get useful guidance related to understanding that help them understand what is the situation of the organization they are coaching. And afterwards, depending on the purpose of the organization, the coaches can identify and select appropriate practices for driving the organization to their purpose. And of course, the coaches, based on their experience, they will be able to adapt the practices that are included, that are suggested by the model, appropriately to the situation of the organization.
Yeah, and really the primary purpose of the KMM is appropriateness. So the value of the KMM model in the first instance is to not just coaches, but any Kanban practitioner to pick appropriate practices and appropriate Kanban implementation patterns for their level of organizational maturity. And Paul alluded to this earlier when he was talking about the structure of the book and the early sections in the book. We recognize two main failure modes with Kanban implementation. There is this failure mode where the organization overreaches. They have read about Kanban. They've read about some very good, elaborate, detailed, complicated implementations. And they think that that's, perhaps it's inspirational to them and it's intellectually interesting. and they pursue this very difficult implementation and they're simply not ready for it. It's inappropriate. And the consequence is that they choke on it and they abandon the implementation. The other failure mode is one where they simply don't try hard enough. They pick too simple of a Kanban implementation and it doesn't stress the organization sufficiently in order to catalyze further improvements. So with that failure mode, what we see is a sort of unit step improvement from the implementation of their usually quite simple Kanban. And then it just stagnates. There's no further improvement coming from it. So that the overreaching problem and the false plateau problem, the we've done Kanban and it was great, what should we do next? So that's by far the primary purpose of the KMM is to avoid those two failure modes and help coaches select appropriate implementation patterns. But your question was about the lead appraiser, and I'll pass it back to Teodora to describe that.
Yeah. Initially, we did not think about appraising organizations and using the KMM, the Kanban maturity model for appraisals. But what happened was completely unexpected for us was that once we launched the model, some organizations started asking us whether there would be a means to appraise their maturity level. And that's made us think of preparing training and preparing some people and also preparing some means for appraising organizations. We are working on this. We are working on the appraisal method. We are working on preparing training materials, training courses for Kanban coaches who are willing to act also as Kanban appraisers and who will be able to appraise to understand the situation of the organizations and will be able to give a qualified evaluation of their current situation and an appraisal of their maturity level.
Yeah,
but this is something very new. We are still working on it.
Indeed. The surprise we got was the organization saying, you know, we need some mechanism to reward people for all the effort they're putting in. And their Kanban implementation might be part of some broader, wider improvement initiative. And in larger organizations we meet, sometimes they've been going for 3 or 4 years and they have an entire department of coaches trying to help the organization improve and adopt new ways of working. And they'd like some recognition for where they are on that journey and to be able to give everyone a collective pat on the back for making some progress on the journey in order to inject some energy into it. Because if they've been at it for 3 or 4 years already, people are jaded. They're exhausted from the coaches constantly coming around to visit them and asking them to try new things and make yet further changes. And there's a feeling from leadership in companies that we've been meeting that being able to appraise, perhaps not just once, but several times over the period of an initiative, allows everyone to reflect on how well we're doing and how far we've come and to help keep the energy level up.
Yep. No, I'm in one of those multi-year journeys now at a large Fortune 500 bank. It's a challenge, but it's a good challenge. We're getting close to the time that we'd like to keep the length of these podcasts. I really want to throw out there one more good wrap-up question is, where do you see the Kanban maturity model headed in the greater Agile scheme of things? Because you're mentioning now, it's usually not just Kanban alone. It's part of a bigger effort. So how do you see KMM fitting into the bigger scheme of Agile?
I don't know that I've thought terribly hard about where it's going and fits into the bigger scheme of the Agile movement. We know where we're going with the KMM in the relatively short to medium term. We're completing the appraisal method. We're completing the leadership practices extension. We'll also do a mapping for our enterprise services planning body of knowledge as another extension to the model, and that will fill out many of the practices in the deeper maturity levels, level 4, 5, and 6. So we certainly have a roadmap for where we're taking KMM. And what's always driven me has been the idea that we need to be helping organizations that, and they in turn need to be serving their customers better. So I tend not to worry terribly much about how the rest of the Agile movement is going or how that market is developing, and focus more on who are the customers and what do they need in their businesses. And for example, the change away from using continuous improvement language to fit for purpose language, and the service orientation and developing and amplifying that service orientation concept within the Kanban body of knowledge, those have happened in response to feedback we get in the market from how well senior leadership and executives respond to the messages and the methods, the techniques, the practices that we're offering them. And therefore, we'll keep the KMM focused on that goal, that we want to help organizations deliver successful, sustainable change, institutionalized change that sticks. And the whether or not that's going to help the wider Agile movement be more successful remains to be seen. We'll see what happens in the market.
Well, that's good. If I had to guess, the continuous improvement in the West probably wants to hear that there's a good enough, there's a done. So the fit for purpose pivot, I can totally get that.
Yeah, that's right. That the continuous improvement thing fits very well with a Buddhist ethic, and therefore, when we encounter Japanese or Chinese executives who've grown up in a Taoist Buddhist or Shinto Buddhist culture, continuous improvement resonates strongly with them. But we found that it was seen as an unobtainable nirvana by Western executives. And it tended to cause them to switch off, because as soon as they believe the consultants, the advisors, are giving them advice that aspires to unobtainable goals, it's not pragmatic anymore.
Sure, it sounds like a continuous invoice. Right.
Yeah. That's very good observation, Paul.
Well, I'm so in middle management at a really bank now, so I'm going through the budget conversations, and it's like, so we'll be done. We'll be DevOps and Agile by this date, right?
Yeah. So it's good to be able to have a test for are we done, and fit for purpose has introduced that concept into the Kanban and enterprise services body of knowledge.
Well, thank you guys both so much for taking the time to talk to us about the Kanban maturity model today. Can you give our listeners a little bit of information about where they can learn more or pick up a copy of the book, or potentially, I think there's classes coming soon as well?
the official website of the Kanban Maturity Model is www.kanbanmaturitymodel.com. And on this website, people can download the posters we use for describing the Kanban Maturity Model. They can also download Chapter 2 of the book with the descriptions of the maturity levels. The book...
I'll carry on now. I was just going to say that there are links to where you can purchase the book.
Yeah. Yeah, from the website of the Kanban Maturity Model, there are links to where you can purchase the book. And there is additional information about the Kanban Maturity Model on the website of Lean Kanban University. And we are developing very actively the classes. We start this autumn. In September, we have the first class on the Kanban Maturity Model in India, after Lean Kanban India, and afterwards we have classes in October in Bilbao and in November in Seattle.
And the details of those can be found on the edu.leankanban.com site, or for the Bangalore class next month, you'll also find the details on the Lean Kanban India website.
Wonderful. We'll make sure we get all of that added to our show notes as well. So if you're looking for any of these links, you'll be able to find them right there underneath our show. Well, thank you again to Teodora and David, and to everyone in our listening audience. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to our future episodes in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcasting platform of choice. And while you're there, please give us a review. It really helps us increase and reach our audience and improve our show. If you'd like to discuss this particular episode or spark up a new conversation, don't forget to join us at coalition.agileuprising.com and follow us on Twitter at Agile Uprising. Thank you guys again, and thank you to my co-host Paul. It was wonderful talking with all of you today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us, Colleen. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much, Paul and Colleen.